I would remind you that only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees may speak without leave of the hall. And finally, I caution those of you who are here because of a special matter of concern to you. Don't bolt the hall as soon as we voted on the matter. Somebody could seek a counted vote or somebody could seek reconsideration. And then you would have left and not be able to participate in that. I've been asked to announce that you should all take a look at the 8th Annual Celebrate Art exhibit of drawings, paintings, photography, jewelry, and ceramics done by the LS students. This exhibit is in the hallway to the left of the stage and in the library corridor near the food table, so you might all want to take a look at that excellent work that's out there. Where we are is on Article 31. Last night, those of you who were here, as you know, a request had been made for 30 minutes of time by the proponents of this article. At that time, Mr. Coe, my fellow moderator, Mr. Coe is moderator of the Water District, recognized that what people were upset about was that it was snowing and they wanted to go home, and it wasn't 30 minutes as such. I have since talked with the proponents of the article, and it turns out that the reason they want the 30 minutes is they want to cover that article and they want to cover 32 A, B, and C all at once, so it'll be sort of a manageable story. And that makes sense to me as a matter of procedure, so it is my right as moderator to rule that that is an appropriate procedure to cover all the articles at once and speak to them all at the same time. However, it is up to the hall as to the amount of time that will be given, but I must point out to you that, or I will point out to you that I think the 30-minute request is reasonable because we're talking about four articles here, and if the request is not granted, they have a perfect right to take up 40 minutes, 10 minutes each article. So I think economy will dictate adopting the procedure. So does anyone have an objection if the proponents of Article 31 take 30 minutes for their presentation? I see no objection. In that case, I recognize, is Sigurd Pickering going to make the first presentation? Yes. The article is the non-binding resolution of the Community Preservation Committee. It was submitted by the Community Preservation Committee. The vote required on a main motion would be a majority on this non-binding article. Ms. Pickering, you're recognized for the resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening.
You have to give us the resolution first.
Move to approve the recommendations of the Community Preservation Committee regarding the Community Preservation Fund budget and projects in fiscal year 04, making particular note that this motion regards a non-binding article and resolution. Funds are not appropriated under this article. The appropriation articles will follow as Articles 32A, B, and C.
Does that receive a second? It does. Pickering, you and your group are recognized for 30 minutes.
Thank you. Good evening. As you've already heard, my name is Sigurd Pickering. I reside at 17 PCAM Circle, and I'm co-chair of the Community Preservation Committee, or the CPC. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here this evening. The CPC administers the Community Preservation Act funds, and the Community Preservation Act, for those of you who may not know, is a statewide initiative created in 2000 to help towns like Sudbury cope with growth by addressing community preservation needs directly at the local level. Sudbury has now joined 57 other cities and towns by adopting the CPA last year. The 3% property tax surcharge began accruing last July. By the end of fiscal year 03, we anticipate $1 million in local receipts. We have $750,000 in hand as of the third quarter. We also expect 100% match from the state in October, or another $1 million. At least since the 1990s, Sudbury voters have supported the idea of a land fund. The CPA provides for that and also funds historic preservation, community housing, and recreation, things that often get short shrift in budgeting considerations. The beauty of this multifaceted approach is that it allows us to shift emphasis where it's most needed over time. The CPA is basically a savings bank for the town to ensure that we devote some resources to the very attributes that make Sudbury the desirable place that we call home. It gives us also the opportunity to implement elements of the new master plan. This is supposed to be the fun part, and you, the voters, actually get to decide every step of the way how the funds get spent. The CPC reviewed the first year budget projections and adopted several fiscal policies recommended by our town manager, Maureen Valente. First, to use only 90% of estimated revenue in our budgeting process to be sure that we remain in the black. The second is to spend only the minimum required under the Act in each of these three categories, reserving most of the CPA money for large projects. The third is to recommend that multi-million dollar projects be funded through the issuance of bonds to leverage the use of the CPA funds and also to distribute the cost of such expenditures to a broader tax base, since the benefits of purchasing land, creating housing, or restoring historic landscapes benefit many generations of residents, not just the current one. As with most other towns that have adopted the CPA, we've chosen to act in the capacity of loan officers, not project managers. The warrant is designed to give as much flexibility in how the funds are spent. Realize that to decline a project or to defeat both articles means that 10% of the fund accrues in each category, open space, historic preservation, and community housing, and it cannot be spent until a project in that category is approved by you, the voters. The balance is held in unrestricted CPA reserve, and it also can't be reappropriated for other town needs or for a project that doesn't have voter approval. Now I'd like to introduce the CPA co-chair, Mark Kablak, who will tell you more about the financial considerations of the CPC. You will then hear from the project proponents. Thank you.
Thank you, Sigrid. Mark Kablak, co-chair of the CPC, 46 Poplar Street. When we formed as a committee in August of last year, we developed standards by which we would move forward. And the primary principle that we adopted as a committee is that we would take advantage of all the committee studies, plans, and reports that had already been conducted by the town, namely the 2001 Master Plan, the 2002 Land Use Priorities Report, the 1997 Open Space and Recreation Plan, and the Townwide Comprehensive Facility Plan. Based upon this prior work, we developed specific program standards and guidelines by which we would review projects for funding. And as part of that study, we issued a report in October of last year, copies of which we did have out on the table in the back. After the publication of that report, we issued an RFP in early October, and responses or proposals under the Act were submitted to the committee through the month of October, ending on October 30. There were 12 proposals submitted to the board. Three were in the category of community housing, three were in the category of historic preservation, four were in the category of recreation, and two were in the category of open space. These were reviewed by the committee, tested in accordance with our guidelines, and three finalists were selected by the committee and ultimately reviewed at a public forum that was held on December 4 in Goodnow Library. The three project finalists are the ones that we propose to fund and are the subject of the Articles 32A, B, and C that will follow this presentation. The three projects are as follows. Acquisition of the Dixon property, a 2.39-acre parcel on Water Row. It was proposed jointly by the Conservation Commission and the Historic Commission. It will require expenditure of $430,000 in acquisition costs, which will be combined with a $10,000 grant from private sources for a total acquisition of $440,000. The second project is a series of renovation and restoration at the Hosmer House, located in Sudbury Center. It was proposed by the Historic Commission. It will total an expenditure of $51,600 and will include a variety of items that the Historic Commission will discuss with you shortly. The third proposal was for rental housing. It was to construct up to 16 units in 7 homes on scattered sites throughout town. It was proposed by the Housing Authority. It will require an expenditure of $320,000 of CPA funds. It will be supported by additional funding of up to $1.1 million in federal and state funds. And it will attempt to achieve the state mandate of 10% minimum of the housing stock available for affordable housing. The fourth funding project that you will see tonight is an actual expenditure by the recommended by the committee itself to allocate up to $45,000, or 5% of the total budget, to be used by the committee for administrative expenses. We have some immediate expenses dealing with clerical support, mailing, legal notices, and the like. But we also want the flexibility going forward, as these projects are developed into the future, of being able to use administrative funds for things like acquisition negotiation, appraisals, consulting surveys, and land surveys. My co-chair, Sigrid Pickering, described the establishment of the budget. And part of this budget requirement requires that we reserve a minimum amount of the total project funds for 3 core areas: open space, historic preservation, and community housing. If we were not able to actually do an appropriation of dollars this year, we needed to show that we were reserving that money at the 10% level for future projects. And you will see in the breakdown on the slide before you that with respect to open space, $66,575 is proposed to be spent for the Dixon land acquisition. The 10% total is $90,000, so that leaves $23,425 reserved for future open space projects. Under the historic category, $51,600 is designated for the Hosmer House restoration, $38,400 is designated for the Dixon land acquisition. Remember, that was a joint program by both historic and conservation. And so the entire 10% allocation for house, for historic preservation is being used this year, and so $0 are being reserved under this year's budget for future expenses. And thirdly, under community housing, although the project is presented tonight for earmarking funds for future expenditure of $320,000, we're actually not appropriating any dollars tonight for that project because there are some other tests that need to be met by the Housing Authority, and I'll get into that later this evening. And so of the $90,000 that's available and must be allocated to housing, $0 are actually being appropriated this year, and $90,000 is being reserved for the future. In addition, Sigrid also mentioned that we have state matching funds. That's the benefit of this project. We're expecting to get a dollar-for-dollar state match of the funds generated this year in October from the state. That, in essence, drives down the cost to the town on each dollar spent to 50 cents. It's an incredible incentive, particularly in these fiscal times. I will discuss later tonight in Article 32A how the state matching funds will be also reserved for future projects. And with that, I'd like to turn the podium now to Richard Bell, who is Vice Chair of the Conservation Commission, to talk particularly about the Dixon Land property.
Thank you, Mark. I live at 24 Austin Road. As Mark has indicated, the Dixon Project is being proposed jointly by the Sudbury Historic Commission and the Sudbury Conservation Commission. It's for the preservation of open space that has extremely high historic and contribution attributes. So we're going to have the next, there's the land. The map shows the location of the Dixon property. It's the red L-shaped piece of land partially surrounding the Haynes Garrison site. It's located just north of Route 27 on Water Row. The Sudbury River is just across the road. The purple areas abutting the property include the King Philip Woods conservation land and the Parker Farm conservation land. Also, across Water Row and along the Sudbury River, in both north and south, are the U.S. Fish and Wildlife land, the Great Meadows National Wildlife Refuge. Other protected as land is shown by the horizontal lines, which include land from the Sudbury Valley Trustees. The green area is still in private ownership, but is high on the priority list for protection under the Sudbury Open Space and Recreation Plan. The Dixon property was originally part of the purchase for King Philip Woods, but it was reserved by the owners when the rest of the parcel was sold to the town and the state in 1986. Although it's not a large parcel, only 2.39 acres, the critical location makes it very important for wildlife and is a corridor connecting the Sudbury floodplain and the forested upland areas. This picture is from Water Row, looking across Haynes Garrison to the Dixon land. Wooded land rises rather steeply away from the river. All this is part of the Haynes Garrison historic battlefield. The battle took place actually almost exactly 327 years ago in April 1976. Via a video clip, we'd like to have John Perez of the Historic Commission say a few words about the garrison and its part in the historic war with King Philip in the battle. Supposed to have a video clip going here, where John is that's what happens with these high-tech presentations. You have these little glitches here. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Essentially, what John is doing is reading the marker, the Haynes Garrison marker, which describes when the battle occurred and something about its background. Also,
Pickering, one of the Conservation Commission.
Yeah. Okay. No. Well, yeah. Why don't you go on? I wanted to have another video clip of Ted Pickering. He already has several words to say about the conservation value of the parcel.
Again, by others. I'm standing on the overlook that Dick Bell just described. The important point to make is that the only place the property perked for a septic system is well into the property, up here by this promontory, and this is where the house would be situated. And right down below us is where the Haynes Garrison Memorial is located, and would certainly intrude on the sight lines there. I'd also like to say that this is something of a keystone property. To my left is the King Philip property. In front of me is the Piper property, and behind me is Great Meadows. And it all links up, and this property is right in the middle of it, and we consider it very important. Thank you.
Okay. The next slide should be a view from the top, showing some visitors. That these were some participants that went on a tour of the land a couple of weeks ago. As you can see from the picture, you do look out over the Sudbury River, which right now looks more like a lake because of the flooding into Wayland. And it's this particular location is probably where a house would be built if the town doesn't acquire the land. if this open space is not acquired by the town, you can be sure that it'll be developed with a mega mansion on the top of the hill. A developer would be pretty much free to build wherever he wanted. Just to give you an impression of what the property might look like with a large house, I have a couple of slides. First is the view from Water Row and the garrison site, showing how the house, how the site would look without a house. Now, if you, in the next slide, if we superimpose a typical large Sudbury house, this is what it might look. Also associated with it are the usual cats, dogs, driveways, septic systems, etc., even possible tennis courts and swimming pools. The only perkable locations for septic systems are high on the hill, not near the road. This means if for a usual gravity flow septic system, this will guarantee that the house will be at or near the top of the hill, as shown here. It will overlook the garrison site and really compromise the aesthetic values of the Haynes garrison site, not to mention the conservation values. Now, I have one last slide, which is some of the financial parameters. That the house was, or the property was appraised for $475,000 in December 2000. The Dixons very generously have signed a purchase and sale agreement for $440,000. There was a $10,000 deposit made from private donations on that. Along with the certain bonding costs, we're talking about a total cost of the property of $446,700. If we did for a 5-year bonding with that number's wrong, it's really three. This is assuming a 3.5% interest rate. The cost in the first fiscal year would be $104,975. I cannot stress enough the value of this parcel. Even though small in area, it's huge in impact on the conservation and historic interests of Sudbury. At this point, with the permission of the moderator, I'd like to yield the floor to John Fraze, the chair of the Sudbury Historical Commission. And this time you'll really hear him.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Good evening. I'm the John Fraze lost in the computer. What that site does, what it does say on that monument, I'd like to share with you. Site of the Haynes Garrison House, home of Deacon John Haynes. Here the settlers, by their brave defense, helped save the town when the Indians tried to destroy Sudbury. 18 to 21 April 1676. And as you know, April is a big month in the history of Sudbury. This was 100 years before the Revolution. It's a beautiful site up there. I hope you support this. I have a few minutes to try to give you a little brief history of the Hosmer House. In case you don't know, the Hosmer House Museum is located in Old Sudbury Center, has been in town ownership since 1959. It contains over 400 paintings of the art collection of Florence Ames Hosmer. Numerous public gatherings are held here throughout the year. We thank the Community Preservation Committee for selecting our project to update and improve the old girl, the house that is. The Hosmer House and her many volunteers enrich this community. Last holiday season, we had hundreds of visitors during our holiday open house. We're also open for the celebrations of Memorial Day, 4th of July, Sudbury Day, and Colonial Day. We open other times for visits of elementary school classes, scouts, and other town groups. At the Hosmer House, we promote the arts, teach a sense of history, and honor those who have passed on. The building, there's quite a list, and it could go on for some time. Basically, The artworks and the structure are threatened. We have put band-aids on things for years. One of the first things on our list, following fire and safety issues, is a baseline investigation into the building's current condition. With this architectural survey, we can then better assess what must be done and when. Then we will be more successful in budgeting preservation activities and seeking other grants or resources. This particular slide, showing the side of the house along Concord Road, I'll mention one thing to it. You can't see it here. There is water in that wall. And you know what water can do to a building. That's one of the first things we'll address. The artist, who I'm falling in love with, Lawrence Ames Hosmer, willed this beautiful 1800s building with all its treasures to our town. It is an asset to this community that enriches all our lives. June and Clay Allen and the Historical Commission ask your support for Article 32A. Let us begin the restoration and rehabilitation of the beloved Sudbury Hosmer House. Thank you. I now introduce you to Mr. John Darcy of the Sudbury Housing Authority.
Good evening. Thank you, John. My name is John Darcy, 82 Cranberry Circle. I'm the current chairperson of the Sudbury Housing Authority. I say current because our committee actually rotates the chairpersonship. I just happen to be lucky this year. So, I would like to acknowledge the other members of the SHA. Steve Swanger is an 18-year public servant. Betty Cornegay, Carol Hamilton, Kelly French, our newest member, Steve Chagru, and our extremely hardworking executive director, Joanne Howe. As many of you have read in the town warrant, at the town meeting warrant, or in the town crier, the Housing Authority has put together a proposal to construct 16 affordable units within 7 houses. To promote the best possible mix, we would prefer to situate these homes on 4 to 5 scattered sites on town-owned land. As the display outlines, we would be building 5 homes containing, we will be building 5 homes containing a 2-bedroom unit and a 3-bedroom unit. We would also like to construct 2 homes which would each contain a 2-bedroom unit along with 2 1-bedroom units. This second configuration does not presently exist in town. However, we presently have a couple of families who live in our properties who, like some in the hall, are empty nesters. It's not a very efficient use of a 2 or a 3-bedroom apartment for us to have an empty nester in there. If we have some 1-bedroom units, we can reassign that person and use the other 2-bedroom units more efficiently. Regardless of the configuration of any individual house, it's our plan that no single home would contain more than 5 bedrooms, which is pretty consistent with much of what you see in town. The total CPA funds requested for this project are $320,000. These funds have been unanimously approved by the Community Preservation Committee and are being voted on tonight. The full project budget is $3.1 million. In addition to the $320,000 from the CPA, the Housing Authority will be contributing $125,000 from its reserves. We will be applying to several state and possibly federal programs for additional funding. These programs, such as the Massachusetts Housing Partnership Program or the Massachusetts Housing Stabilization Fund, are not funded through the state's operating budget. They continue to accept applications, and preliminary inquiries have been received very favorably. We expect to be able to obtain somewhere between $750,000 and $1.1 million from these sources. The balance between $1.5 and $1.9 million would be obtained through private bank or government program, government loans. The debt service would be paid from our rental income. Homes would be owned and operated by the Housing Authority. We would be using an award-winning home design, which is already in use in town and has been very well received. This particular house is an example of a two-bedroom, three-bedroom duplex. This particular house, we took that picture yesterday. Nice spring day in Sudbury. We didn't take it yesterday. We took it a while ago. That happens to be a two-bedroom, two-bedroom. We wouldn't be building that shape, that configuration. But that's an example of the kind of construction that we do plan. As is self-evident to most of the hall, Sudbury is becoming less and less affordable. The master plan, which was referred to earlier, was rewritten a few years back and specifically calls for an increase in the town's affordable housing stock. And Massachusetts General Law, Section 40B, enacted in 1969, which is commonly referred to as the anti-snob zoning law, under 40B, each city and town is supposed to have 10% of its housing stock affordable. Affordable means that someone earning 80% of the area's median income could spend 30% of their income for their housing. Of the 4,700 plus housing units in Sudbury, 214 of those are affordable, or about 3.7%. Without 10%, private developers can bypass some of our zoning regulations if they include affordable housing in their development. This plan is one step to the town having more say about what is built. Why have we proposed family units? Wouldn't senior units be a lot easier to sell to the hall? Certainly. It probably would be an easier sell. Nevertheless, reality is that we already do a pretty good job of meeting the need for affordable senior housing. Sudbury seniors who qualify from Skedaddy Village seldom wait more than a few months. We're moving someone in this month, and we'll have a wait, and on our waiting list will be no one from Sudbury. We have a 45 family waiting list for family housing. It's presently closed, and one family has been on that list since 1991. Again, some have suggested that it would be nicer if we would come up with a plan for home ownership. The Housing Authority is not allowed to. By state mandate, we can only deal with rentals. We think some affordable home ownership programs are a very good idea, and we support there being a wide spectrum of affordable.
Mr. Darcy, the 30 minutes is up. How much time do you need to finish up?
5 minutes.
Does the hall have any objection? Go ahead, sir. 5 more minutes.
The new community housing committee that the selectmen have established will most likely be looking at home ownership as one option, and we support their efforts. Why build 1, 2, 3 houses here and there? Some have suggested that it would be a bigger bang for our buck if we built a complex. We'd get closer to the 10%. We're only suggesting 16 units. Longfellow Glen is a big complex. It provides a large number of affordable units in one location. Most private developers would only want to build with this kind of economy of scale. The Housing Authority, from the many meetings that we've sat in, and we've always had a representative on the long-range planning, on the long-range land use committee, on the master plan committee, we believe the scattered site approach is better for everyone involved. We think that you'd prefer that we spend your money that way. Our construction goal is to be neighborhood appropriate, nice landscaping, and we're generally looking for one buildable acre per house. If for any reason we are not able to construct all 16 units, our CPA funding would be on a pro rata basis. Unused funds will be returned to the CPC to allocate for other approved CPA projects. I shouldn't even say return because they will never give them to us. They'll only give us $20,000 per unit. Final construction will require four steps. Approval of CPA funding by the CPC, which has already occurred, and by town meeting. Approval of site transfers, sales by town meeting, and you probably know that it's our intention to ask for indefinite postponement of all of the site articles that are on this year's town warrant. So approval of sites would be next year's town meeting. Funding by state federal programs, approval of building permits by town boards and agencies as required. The next step is site selection. After you vote to approve this plan, a site review panel is being established with the selectmen. That panel will review and recommend sites for votes by the 2004 town meeting. If you want to volunteer to put in your time, you can call the SHA or the selectmen. The town manager's office, sorry. Your vote tonight is step one. Why should we do this now? Some will suggest that we should put off a vote on this until we have the sites nailed down. Well, the reality is it's a four-step process no matter what. And we always separated the site approval from the project approval. We wanted to give the town the most leeway to vote yes or no on individual sites that we could possibly give. So whether everything was voted tonight under separate articles or whether something is voted tonight and something is voted next year, there's not much difference to the town. Where there is a difference is the funding sources. If you vote yes tonight, we can start the ball rolling with state and federal applications. We can't do that if we don't already have the town of Sudbury as one of the investors. There's no way that the state or the federal government will be willing to earmark funds for this program unless they already know that the town is behind it. It will be a message to the site review panel. Anyone who is willing to put in time and energy would like to know that the time and energy they expend will at least be worthwhile next year. A message of what Sudbury wants to do. You have to ask yourself, is this something that we want to do? And if it is, then you vote yes. And then we deal with the sites. So, to wrap up, finally, we propose to build seven houses, 16 living units. We would prefer they be situated on four to five scattered sites. Each house would have a maximum of five bedrooms. There are some examples coming up for you. This plan helps to preserve a more diverse community, perhaps providing an opportunity for a present resident's child, a town employee, or someone working in a local business to live here who otherwise might not be able to. The Community Preservation Act is intended for this purpose. Affordable housing is one of the mandated funding categories. There are some towns which choose to use a great portion of their money towards this goal. Combined with donated town-owned land and SHA money, CPA funds can create real change that is otherwise extremely unlikely. In last week's town crier, Hale Lamont Havers wrote, "It's the least we can do." I agree with her. We ask you to support it.
Thank you, John. That concludes our presentation. We urge support of this article. Thank you.
In order to go forward with this procedure, first with the resolution and the articles. I would now call upon the Finance Committee for their position on the resolution and indicate the Finance Committee's position on the three articles to follow all at the same time.
The Finance Committee commends the Community Preservation Committee on the many months of hard work they have done to come to this year's town meeting with three worthy proposals for our consideration. The financial plan is conservative, well thought out, and is based on advice from the finance director, the town manager, and bond counsel. The Finance Committee recommends approval of the projects brought by the CPC in Articles 31 and 32.
The selectmen, again, could the selectmen indicate both their position on the resolution and each of the articles, please?
Yes, thank you. The community preservation proposal may seem very complex, and if left up to the Department of Revenue, could send us potentially all to the loony bin. The members of the committee have taken extraordinary pains to detail the background of this committee and the projects brought before you this evening. It is a credit to the CPC members who sat through this process night after night and tried to wade through the many, many nuances of the statute that we have indeed established a very high level of expectation for each of the three categories in order to be considered for monies from the CPA fund. The Board of Selectmen is pleased to acknowledge that all three core categories are represented in this round. While there may be questions regarding the Housing Authority article, the intention is to move forward cautiously as well as thoroughly. The Community Preservation Committee understands that the Housing Authority project must still undergo a great deal of scrutiny prior to the release of the funds. The Housing Authority article is structured to accommodate the necessary planning and permitting process required for this project. Further, a newly established site selection panel for affordable housing will serve the community as an aid in determining appropriate sites for developing affordable housing, thereby alleviating concerns about a proper process and dialogue with the community. This, above all, is a vital part of any initiative proposed at town meeting. The projects brought before you this evening have met the several sets of criteria set forth by the CPC. These projects are part of the fiscally responsible process, and while meeting the established criteria, are additionally part of the mandated categories, additionally meeting the town's master plan goals and propose an ongoing effort to achieve those goals. The town appears ready to meet the challenge with a dedicated funding source, matching monies from a state fund, and participation by an intelligent, thorough group of individuals who bring much experience to your Community Preservation Act. The Board of Selectmen sees this as highly beneficial to our community and urges your support. Thank you.
All right. Now, at this time, what I'm going to open for general debate is just Article 31, that is to say the non-binding resolution. And people may address that. Now, I want to caution you, before we get into an extended discussion of 31, keep in mind, 31 is a non-binding resolution. Your vote on 31 will not move any money or anything else. It is the articles that are going to follow that will have actual financial consequences. So people might keep that in mind. If it's a specific thing here that you're interested in, want to amend, you might want to look at the three articles rather than the non-binding resolution. With that predicate, we're open for debate on the non-binding resolution. Yes, sir.
Chris Morley from the Planning Board. The Planning Board unanimously supports Articles 31 and 32, A, B, and C. Community Preservation Act is the most effective means of implementing the master plan and creating a sustainable Sudbury. The latest build-out figures for Sudbury indicate that the town has the potential to grow by more than 30% in general population, school population, water consumption, new road construction, and solid waste production. If we desire to maintain the character of Sudbury and protect the legacy of its past, assertive steps must be taken. The Community Preservation Act provides the needed funds to accomplish many of the objectives in the master plan, which seek to maintain character and preserve our natural resources. As evident in the first year of proposals, CPA funds will be used for preservation of our historic structures and landscapes, natural resource protection, and creation of community housing. For the Planning Board's representation on the Community Preservation Committee, the Planning Board will continue to implement creative solutions to Sudbury's growth issues. We will work as an advocate for all of the purposes defined under the Community Preservation Act in order to enhance the quality of our life and our community. Thank you.
Does anyone else wish to be heard now on the motion under Article 31? Yes, sir.
A question on Article 31. Basically, is there any guarantee or proof that funds will be available from state and federal sources as we proceed, looking at what's happening now to state and federal budgets?
Pickering, you want to address that question?
Although there have been in any of the last 2 years probably 20 attempts to divert the dedicated funding source from the state revenue side to other uses, all of those have been defeated. The source of the matching funds actually comes from fees at the Registry of Deeds. These are dedicated funds, and they are protected in such a way that at this point we have no indication that there will be any change in that status. And so it is our expectation, because we went with the 3% charge, we are entitled to 100% match under the current figures that we've been given by the state. So the funds are intact. They're immune from what's going on with the Romney administration, at least for now. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Thomas Holliker, Concord Road. Question. On one of the view graphs, there was a phrase that read 10% or else. Is Sudbury under some sort of deadline or other problem in developing 10% of affordable housing?
Mr. Darcy, do you want to address that question?
It's not so much a deadline as it is a mandate from the state that each city and town have 10% of its housing stock be affordable. The stick that goes with that is already in place is a developer who can apply under Chapter 40B for some relief of town zoning regulations. As long as that developer agrees to include 25% of whatever they are the units they're building as affordable. There are only two examples that I'm aware of that have been built recently in town, but perhaps the selectman or someone else can correct me if I'm mistaken, is the Orchard Hill assisted living complex was built under a comprehensive permit, and because they included 9 affordable units, they got to be a little bit more dense than otherwise they may have been allowed to be. And the Alan Maroney construction, which is occurring now on Boston Post Road, I believe was permitted under the same thing. So there's not a time by which we need to do it. When you get to 10%, then developers can't apply for a comprehensive permit. Cannot.
I don't know if I need to be corrected.
Does anyone else wish to be heard on the motion on Article 31?
Here.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mike Meixel, 34 Barton Drive. I favor the article. However, I'm not quite clear on the matching funds. Are those something which happen on an annual basis, or how does that take place? That's a question for the committee.
The town is eligible for the stateside match on an annual basis. The calculation and the distribution is based on basically we've got one pie, and however many towns adopt the CPA, the pie has to be divided amongst them. So by getting in early and imposing the surcharge at 3%, we are
at this juncture guaranteed a 100% match. We anticipate that for several years running, and then the CPC's 10-year projections actually have conservatively ratcheted that down over time, not because that's cast in stone, but because we anticipate that over time, closer to the 351 cities and towns in Massachusetts will adopt the fund, and it has to be distributed amongst all of them. It's a fairly complicated formula, but by keeping it at 3%, we're more likely to get the full 100%.
Yes, sir.
James Frazier, 81 Moore Road, a question for the Housing Authority. We're offered the goal of 10%, at which point we would be exempt from 40B. Do you have any timeline in which you might accomplish that goal?
Darcy, do you want to address that question?
Mr. Moderator, I'll try and take that one. Thank you. There is no particular timeline. The number of homes in Sudbury currently are about 5,700. 10% of that would be 570 units. We currently have about 300 units or so in total, with the vast majority being at Longfellow Glen. So we would need to build somewhere in the vicinity of 200 units. This would be a start, but as we progress towards that 10%, the other added benefit is that the state agency, the Community Housing and Development Agency, has indicated that if a community shows that they are taking steps to be proactive towards developing affordable housing, and rather than being stagnant and doing nothing, they can protect themselves from having developers come in and propose large, oversized 40B developments that are exempt from local zoning and only have to comply with Title V and Wetlands Protection Acts, so that you could take a one-acre parcel of land that under Sudbury zoning would accommodate a single-family home, and you could put three, four, five, six, whatever number of units the Board of Health would be willing to permit based on perkability. So you could have very high density on very small parcels of land. The Housing Authority's proposal allows us to protect ourselves while simultaneously moving us towards the 10%.
Anyone else wish to be heard on this resolution under Article 31? I see no one. All those in favor of the resolution under Article 31, please indicate by raising your cards. All opposed? The resolution carries. We're now at Article 32A. And we will begin with having a motion, and then I will open for general debate. Mr. Cavillac.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to approve the recommendations of the Community Preservation Committee to appropriate the sum of $96,600 by transfer from the fiscal year 04 Community Preservation Fund revenues as follows. Rehabilitation of the Hosmer House, $51,600. Administrative expenses of the CPC, $45,000. And to reserve the following fiscal year 04 Community Preservation Fund revenues, including the state matching funds, as follows. Reserved for open space restricted purposes, $113,425. Reserved for community housing restricted purposes, $180,000. Reserved for historical resources restricted purposes, $90,000. And finally, reserved for unrestricted Community Preservation Fund projects, $1,215,000.
Problem here. Why take a second on that? Okay. Does that receive a second?
It does.
All right. I take it you don't need any further presentation. I can open this for debate. Is that right, Mr. Cavillari?
I do want to explain the change in the numbers between what's in the article and what was in the motion.
All right.
And just briefly, 32A is the cash appropriation and cash reserves. 32B and C will be conducted shortly. And the numbers are different than as shown in your warrant article because they include now the estimate of the state matching funds. And that is what has been included on a dollar-for-dollar basis. Thank you.
All right. Now, does anyone wish to be heard on the motion under Article 32A? Yes, sir.
James Gardner for Longfellow Road. I'd just like to be sure I understand that last comment. You said that this includes the matching funds that are anticipated. Is there a provision in this motion that would reduce these numbers by the $90,000 per category if those matching funds are not received?
As Selectman Rapini had mentioned, the Department of Revenue is driving us nuts on this statute, and we are actually appropriating 04 money, both from the local surcharge revenues as well as from the state match, and they are requiring us to use a best estimate and actually list a dollar figure. If the dollar figure is not actually what is received from the state, the reserved amounts will need to be adjusted at a later town meeting. And I do want to point out that the reservation of these funds is not expenditure of those funds. The only expenditure of the funds in this particular article is the $51,600 for the Hosmer House project and the $45,000 for admin expenses.
Why not leave these numbers without the $90,000 per category from the state and then add that in later if that money ever comes in?
There is a provision in the DOR guidelines, and we're getting into the nuances of accounting now, but there's a provision in there that will not allow us at a future town meeting to spend those funds if we don't reserve them on a dollar-for-dollar basis between the period in which we set the tax rate for fiscal year 05, I believe, '04, which will happen in December 04, between that date and the date in which the Department of Revenue certifies our tax base, which doesn't happen until August of the following year. And so by doing this dollar-for-dollar reservation, we have the potential of bringing additional proposals back before town meeting in the spring of 2004.
Thank you. And finally, you've put the $180,000 into the community housing. The article in the warrant had suggested you would have only $13,000 here with $77,000 in 32C. Are you, as I understand it, the reserve is intended to reach 10%, accounting for the other expenditures. Are you zeroing out the request in 32C?
Yeah, what happened in the Housing Authority article that I'll explain a little bit in 30 when we get to 32C, but since the question's been asked now, I'll address it. Initially, we were moving forward as if there would be a potential fiscal year 04 appropriation for the Housing Authority article. But when the Housing Authority made the decision to IP the site selection articles that are to follow, the committee made the decision to support the project, but we withdrew all current fiscal year appropriation for that project. So the number that you saw in the booklet was reduced down to zero. So the money spent for the Housing Authority category in 04 is actually zero, and that's why you see the number inflated in the reservation column.
Thank you.
Ms. Coe?
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I'm still listening, trying to figure out what's happening here. Apparently, what you're doing here is this is just saying that we're allocating or budgeting this. Okay, and then if we object to bonding in the later parts, we will not lock ourselves out by voting this.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 32A? Yes, sir.
James Frazier, 81 Moore Road. Would you tell us, please, why you're reserving unrestricted funds? What is accomplished by that?
This is, again, a nuance to the Community Preservation Act. The funds are never part of the general revenue of the town. And, again, the Department of Revenue guidelines require the town to reserve funds in each of those three core areas, and then to actually go through the process of reserving funds for unrestricted community preservation fund basis. In other words, it's not earmarked toward any of the four categories, those categories being open space, historic preservation, community housing, or recreation, but they're unrestricted for any of those categories, meaning at a future town meeting, if we decide to do something along the lines of a recreational use, we'll be entitled to use all of the $1.215 million that'll be reserved in the general unrestricted account.
Yes, ma'am.
Lee Michaels, Horse Pond Road. Under the reserved open space restricted, you have now $113,000. 425, when under the resolution it was 23,425. Can somebody explain the difference?
Yes, again, what these numbers show, the difference between these numbers on the screen and the numbers that are in your booklet is that we took the projected state matching funds that we will get in October, roughly October 15, and we equated that to a dollar figure in order that we have use of those funds throughout the entire fiscal year. And so the state match funds that will be allocated or have to be allocated to the open space category that is coming from the state fund is $90,000. So the $90,000, when added to the number in your booklet, is the number shown on the screen. And similarly, with respect to the housing article, the $90,000 was added to the $90,000 reserved because of the change in the Housing Authority article, and that now shows at $180,000. And finally, the same equation of adding $90,000 to the historic category. Now, historic is using all of their money this year between the Hosmer House and the Dixon land purchase that we have budgeted, and so the $90,000 is just from the state match in that category.
Yes.
My name is Jim Sutherland, and I live at 14 Beechwood Ave. Help me understand something, please. This is part of the overall budget, the town budget.
No.
This is a segregated funding source called the Community Preservation Act. It creates what's called the Community Preservation Fund, and that fund can only be spent for those four purposes: open space, housing, recreation, and historic preservation. It is totally separate from the general revenue and general budget. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion on Article 32A? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 32A, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed? The motion carries. We now come to Article 32B, again submitted by the Community Preservation Commission. The vote required on this motion, on a main motion under this article, would be a two-thirds vote. Recognize Mr. Cablack for the purpose of making the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to approve the recommendation of the Community Preservation Committee
to appropriate $446,700 for the purchase and or taking by eminent domain of a parcel of land containing 2.39 acres, known as the Dixon property, and shown on Assessor's Map H11, Parcel 305, for the purpose of acquiring open space and a historic resource, including costs of issuance of bonds or notes, therefore, that to meet this appropriation, the Treasurer, with the approval of the Selectmen, is authorized to borrow $446,700 under General Law Chapter 44B, Section 11, and General Law Chapter 44, Section 7, Subsection 3, or any other enabling authority, that the Board of Selectmen is authorized to take any other action necessary to carry out this project, and that $104,975 is appropriated from fiscal year 2004 Community Preservation Fund revenues to pay debt service due during fiscal year 2004 on any bonds or notes issued under this Article 32B.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Kablak, did you have any detail you needed to go into before we open it to general debate?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. There are number changes here that are different in your booklet as well, and that reflects the fact that we now have a better idea of what the maximum bonding cost would be for this project. In your booklet, I believe the project cost is listed at $430,000. The number that is in the motion is $446,700. It represents a maximum expected bonding cost of $16,700. Similarly, the fiscal year appropriation for this project assumes that based on $446,700 over a bonding period of approximately 5 years and an assumed interest rate of 3.5%, that the debt service maximum for fiscal year 04 will be $104,975. All right.
Does anyone wish to be heard on the motion under Article 32B? Ms. Coe. Those of you standing in the rear of the hall, if you'd like, there are a number of seats down here down front.
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. On the last article, I said it asked if we could negotiate about the bonding if we passed the last section of the article. I am against bonding under CPA. And the reason is that when they sold us CPA, they told it was a five-year deal. It's not exactly a five-year deal. It's a five-year deal if you don't bond. It is, if you bond under CPA, you are stuck in CPA until those bonds are paid off, which could be 6, 7, 8, 10 years. And that is why I don't want to bond under CPA. Let's see. I had looked at the total receipts in the fiscal FY04 was $900,000. That's what we would get from the tax collection. The money that we get from the state is variable depending on how many deeds they take stamps on and how many people participate. That's a wild card. We can guess, but it's a wild card. And the fact of the matter is, at this time, right now, we're getting more money. You will be getting more money from the state than we will get in the future. The more people, the more communities that join, the less money we will be getting from the state. At least in the table that we were first given in the warrant, there was enough money to pay for the housing authority and for this outright without doing any bonding. And while it's true that interest rates are the lowest they are right now, we have a lot of treacherous things going on in the finances, both of the state and even in our own backyard. I mean, Compaq lays off a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of houses go up on the market, and there's nothing we can do about it. So I feel that we should not be wasting precious CPA funds on interest if we have the money available to pay for these projects outright. And let's see. Okay, well, last night we postponed the budget because the state budget is so messed up that we don't even know what's going to happen to the state budget by July 1st. And it seems to me that it would be better to keep our options open by paying for things that we have the money to pay for rather than bonding. And that way, if things get so fouled up that we want to get out of CPA in 5 years, and remember, CPA is a tax on your tax bill. What happens if we run into trouble with $100 million we've bonded for schools, thinking that the state's going to pick up the tab for two-thirds of that? I mean, there's only 5,500 families in the town to pay for that. And the $100 million we bonded was just principal. That's not the interest. I think that we should really think twice about getting ourselves into long-term commitments that we can't get out of. We have the money to pay for this outright from the collection that we have from CPA. We're going to get somewhere between $900,000 for ourselves. They feel we're going to get approximately 100% of that in addition. We have this $446,000 in our hands this year. I don't see why we have to bond it, and that's why I am against bonding this, and I would say defeat Article 32B. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 32B? Yes, sir.
I haven't moved by Barbara Road. I never thought it, but I agree with Martha.
That's one from my memoirs. Yes, ma'am.
Judy Deutsch from 41 Concord Road. I have a question. What would happen if we do, as Martha suggests, and take the money that we have this year and spend it, and next year decide that we want to go ahead with the housing project? Would we have sufficient funds available to go ahead?
Mr. Kablak, can you address that? Or?
Yes.
Could you put the slide up that shows the $1.2 million in reserves? It's in the motion for 32A.
I'm going to ask...
That is sufficient funds without borrowing.
Okay. I'm going to ask for the 32A motion slide to be put up because it'll help me illustrate something for this question.
Thanks.
Okay, at the very bottom of the screen, you'll note again that there is a vote now to reserve $1,215,000 in the general unrestricted community preservation fund account. And the immediate answer to your question and to the comment of Ms. Coe is that clearly, this amount of money is more than enough to pay for all of the projects that are proposed tonight. But the reservation of these funds is actually giving flexibility to the town and building into this entire concept the planning tool that it was meant to provide.
The $1,215,000 that you see up there, not even looking at the 10% requirements in each of those core areas, those are funds that we can use as a planning tool on those projects that are coming down the pike. There's a large land parcel in town that we're currently negotiating with the landowner with to purchase. It's possible that that will help happen shortly, and these funds can be used for that. So the short answer to your question is that there's more than enough cash on hand to fund these projects, but as a planning tool, it makes sense, and the committee has endorsed the concept of reserving funds for a rainy day. And I might also mention a couple of interest rate figures that you might find of interest. The current interest rate, the approximate interest rate that we'll get on the $1,215,000 that will be banked by the town until this town meeting decides to spend it, is currently 1.6%. These are figures from the finance director. If we decide through the issuance of bonds or notes to go through what's called the State House note procedure, the interest rate on those State House notes is only a point and a half. So we actually gain a percentage point, a fraction of a percentage point, by not spending that money and investing it, oddly as though it may seem. If we decide to bond it using the Wall Street bonding process, the current interest rate on that is 2%. So we would have a net loss based on the interest accrued on the $1,215,000 that we're banking, but it's only 0.4%. So from the CPC's perspective, yes, we have cash on hand to fund all of this, but the design is really to do a lot more than these three projects. The design is to develop a future for Sudbury. It's best done by reserving funds, and the cost of bonding at this particular time makes a whole lot of sense to us.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else wish to be heard on this motion? Yes, yes, sir.
Robert McDonald, 23 Aaron Road. Could this property ever be used for anything other than open space?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Could this property be used for anything other than open space?
The Dixon Land property?
Yes.
The requirement of the Community Preservation Act, when you use funds to carry out the four categories that it sponsors, you actually have to restrict the property for the purpose that you spent the money for. And so the Dixon Land property, because it's being acquired for open space and historic purposes, would have to be restricted in perpetuity as open space and a historic resource.
So it could not be transferred for any other use?
Only those two uses.
Okay, so there wouldn't wind up being any houses on this property?
Not on Dixon, no.
Yes, sir.
Steve Brunner, 182 Maynard Road. If we did not pass this article, this motion actually, would these funds be available for a future article, say 33, to purchase the cutting property? The $104,000.
Yes, the large land acquisition piece that I just referred to is the cutting property. There will be discussion on that follows, and I don't want to take any presentation material away from the presenter of that article. But the cutting property has been discussed by the committee, would potentially qualify under the guidelines that we've developed. And yes, all or some of the money that you see up on the board could be used toward the cutting property.
In that case, I urge defeat of this motion because the cost per acre is much more reasonable on the cutting property.
Yes, ma'am.
Leslie Leon, 101 River Road. I wonder if you would mind answering one of the points that was brought up earlier. If we bond this for the five-year bond, does that take the CPA surcharges or make it necessary for those surcharges to extend beyond the original 5 years?
There are
some misconceptions out there about this five-year period for the Community Preservation Act. The Community Preservation Act does not have a sunset provision in it, meaning that it doesn't expire automatically at the end of the 5 years. The five-year period is a period that restricts the town through the same process by which the town adopted the Community Preservation Act. It restricts the town from undoing the Community Preservation Local Tax Surcharge. So after 5 years from the date we adopted the act locally, which was in March of 2002, so in March of 2007 and beyond, the town, through the same process by which it adopted the act, can nullify the act, and that process is by approval by town meeting and a subsequent referendum vote. Now, what the town will be faced with going forward, if it doesn't go through that process of nullification, is that the Community Preservation Act will stay in effect in perpetuity until it's undone. So there's some misconception about that five-year provision. It is not a sunset provision.
Gentleman over here. James Frazier, Moore Road. I see that we're paying through this Community Preservation Fund for the first year's bond cost and repayment. How about the following years? Is this a burden on the fund or on the town?
This will always be a burden on the fund as long as the fund is in existence. And each year you will see for this particular property, if it's passed tonight, until the debt service is entirely paid off. So foreseeably over 5 years, you'll see a line item in the next four town meetings of an amount similar to this. The amount actually will go down over time. This is the maximum amount of debt service because some of the interest is front-loaded. And so you'll see a line item on the Community Preservation Committee warrant articles going forward of an appropriation of about $100,000 to continue to fund this particular article. And that's simply how the accounting works under the Act.
Fine. That means more time lost of every town meeting for 5 years, and I must say I'm not looking forward to it.
Yes, sir.
Andy Schwartz, Metacomet Way. Has the Conservation Commission rendered an opinion on whether they, with regard to this acquisition, does this land have any conservation value other than just it being open space?
I'd like to have Richard Bell answer that question.
Yes, we feel that this is an extremely important piece of land for conservation purposes. It's a very important corridor connecting the Sudbury River to the forested uplands. And even though it might be fairly small, to break it up by putting a house or something like that is going to really have a very adverse effect on its conservation value. So the Conservation Commission really loves this. We really support it very, very strongly.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I'm Laura McGrath from 245 Water Row. I noticed that yesterday when town meeting opened with the video, one of the achievements that was listed as something the town is justifiably proud of was having prevented power lines from being put along the Sudbury River back, I'm not sure how many years ago, but it was a big achievement listed, you know, right up there among the high points in the town's history. And what that did was preserve a vista that this piece of property overlooks. It's if you've been to the Haynes Garrison, it's a spot that lets your imagination go, just in looking at both the natural and the human history of that site. If you lose that high point, I think there's a real loss for the future for people to be able to really visualize what this land looked like many, many years ago, and to imagine what really what it was like to struggle and shape this human community as well. And in that sense, I think there's something special about this land that makes it difficult to compare